All right. That was Bad Brains, and this is Indie Media On Air. This is Chris Burnett, and I am in studio once again with Steven Starr.
Hey, Chris.
How you doing? Well, all right, we have a really good show for you today. We are going to be talking to folks in Ohio about what's happening with the elections, the recounts, and all associated details. But before that, we're going to go to headlines once again from indiemedia.org. 2004, the fourth warmest year globally. The World Meteorological Organization has determined that 2004 was the fourth warmest year since accurate records commenced in 1861. The last 10 years, that's 1995 to 2004, with the exception of 1996, are among the warmest 10 years on record. The 10th session of the Conference of Parties of the Framework Convention on Climate Change has just completed meeting in Buenos Aires, Argentina. The USA continues to obstruct climate talks along with Saudi Arabia. For the first time, Australia distanced itself slightly from the United States' hardline attempts to stall international action to stop global warming. The United States is about to be charged with human rights violations for contributing substantially to global warming by the Inuit, whose homeland stretches from the northeastern tip of Russia across Alaska and northern Canada to parts of Greenland. The Bush administration shuns latest global warming studies. This story can be found at indiemedia.org, or you can follow up details at Argentina IMC or Melbourne IMC. And this story from dcindiemedia.org newswire via indiemedia.us. Independent media converges to cover Bush inauguration. This is a call out to all you independent media reporters and community activists who want to go to D.C. As they say on the newswire, we are contacting you as an important member of the independent media community to ask you to participate in, support, or promote independent media coverage of the upcoming presidential inauguration in January. From January 10th through January 24th, independent media makers will converge in the nation's capital to provide continuous coverage of the inauguration through video, photography, radio, print, and web postings. We are a group of independent media makers in Washington, D.C. that has formed to help facilitate and coordinate coverage of the inauguration. For more information, please visit the website at inaugurationmedia.org. That's inaugurationmedia.org. A list of the needs follows at the end of the letter, along with information on how to join the listservs. Information about specific media projects during the inauguration will be available at the website in the coming weeks. So that is from indiemedia.us. Or directly through dc.indiemedia.org. And the last story I'm going to read today for the headlines is from michiganimc.org via indiemedia.us. A new study finds rent unaffordable for a third of Americans. A new study by the National Low Income Housing Coalition has found that the cost of rental housing in the United States is out of reach for the majority of low-wage earners, including elderly and disabled people with public income benefits. The report states that a third of the nation has difficulty affording rent and most often choose between paying rent and other expenses such as food. In 2004, the cost of rent continued to grow faster than wages, and there is not a single jurisdiction in the country where a person working full-time at minimum wage can afford a two-bedroom rental home. In Michigan, a person earning a minimum wage of $5.15 per hour must work 105 hours per week in order to afford a two-bedroom unit at the fair market rent rate of $706 per month. For more information, visit michiganimc.org. All right, so Indie Media On Air today is happy to welcome Steven Starr back into the studio. Steven, how you doing?
Yeah, it's great to be here, Chris. Thanks for having us.
So what's going on? We have we have some special guests, and we're going to talk about what's happening in Ohio.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing, Ohio. We seem to keep seeing a surge in complications coming out of the voting process there. And for those of you who are just tuning in, we will be joined today not by pundits from Los Angeles or New York, but actually two people on the ground in Ohio, both of whom you've heard on Democracy Now! And or Pacifica over the years. We will be joined by Bob Fitrakis, who is a political science professor at Columbus State Community College, and notably he's the author of four books, as well as having been a member of the Human Rights Party in Michigan and a candidate for Congress in the 12th District in 92. Bob is the executive director of the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, and the editor of the Columbus Free Press. Now, the original Columbus Free Press grew out of the anti-war movement. It was inspired, actually launched at the time of the Kent State massacre in 1970. Bob and his associates, who include Harvey Wasserman, who I'm sure many of you know as one of the founders of the Clamshell Alliance, among many other activist efforts, have been working at the Columbus Free Press for some time now. And Bob, it's great to have you on the show.
Oh, glad to be talking with you.
Also joining us at the same time in a bit of a roundtable to give you all, our listeners, a real look from the ground up at what's been happening in Ohio recently is Evan Davis. Evan Davis is a Pacifica correspondent, has been involved with everything from indie media to the early stages of free speech radio news. And Evan, we're happy to have you on the show as well.
Great. Glad to be back on the air.
So the two of you are living in what is seems to be a mounting crisis, and the crisis is a crisis of democracy, and that crisis is taking place on the ground in Ohio as we speak. It gives rise to questions about governance, questions about democracy in general, questions about democratic process, and of course we're talking about the Ohio voting and the recount that has been organized with some degree of subterfuge. Maybe in order to give our listeners a real good start here, I'm going to ask you, Evan, because I'm familiar with your extensive work from April on in terms of how the Diebold voting machine crisis unfolded in Ohio. But maybe you could give our listeners a look at what started in April from your research up until Election Day. And then, Bob, maybe you could pick up from Election Day and give our viewers, our listeners, an overview of what's been happening since November, and then we'll get into some questions about the details of it. Thanks a lot, Evan.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that we could really start this in April when the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections held one of their first rallies in opposition to the Diebold Corporation, the Ohio-based voting machine vendor company, which was in the pocket of the Secretary of State was in the pocket of in promoting the paperless voting machines throughout Ohio and all of its 88 counties. But let me just anecdotally jump way back beyond that, several centuries, in fact, to note that Ohio was also the site of the first representative democracy on the North American continent. Ohio was the nexus of the Iroquois Federation, which united all of the First Nations from the Mississippi to New York and from Canada down to the Florida Panhandle in what was essentially a coalition of nations, each of which had their own democratic, almost constitutional democracies. And with the elimination of those, with the advent of the white so-called settlers from Europe, it would be close to 300 years before women were able to vote again. And ever since then, and before then too, Ohio has been in the center of the struggle for voting rights. And now, I mention that because I was reviewing some of the recordings I did at that first April rally that Kay sponsored, and there was a history professor there who noted Ohio's significance in the suffrage movements, both for women's suffrage and for African American voting rights. Of course, it was activists from Ohio who made the news by driving all the way down to Mississippi to participate in the first Freedom Rides. And now taking us all the way up to the present, we're about to embark on another Freedom Ride. That is, a bus will be chartered from Columbus to Washington, D.C. on January 5th to take voters who were denied the opportunity to cast their ballots here in Ohio to go lobby their senators and congressmen in support of a congressional contest of election. So getting back to the spring of this year, that was one of the very successful grassroots campaigns that happened here with the Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections, organized by a couple of local activists, Jody Scarborough and Susan Truitt. It began to research the possible effects of having paperless voting machines implemented throughout the state. And in some of their research, they found that the paperless voting machines actually violated the Fair Voting Act, because that act and also Ohio law requires that any votes cast in any election be able to be recounted if there is a challenge to that election. And now here throughout Ohio, we see that we just had a recount, and only in the counties that had the paper punch card ballots were we able to see the actual voters' votes. But in Franklin County here in Columbus, where we have the touchscreen machines, there really were no votes to be counted, only the electronic inputs from the voters, and no way to verify their accuracy. So the Secretary of State wanted all Ohio's counties to purchase the Diebold voting machines. Of course, we know that Diebold's CEO, Walden O'Dell, had said at a fundraising dinner in the winter previously that it was his intention to deliver Ohio's electoral votes to the GOP. That's an exact quote. So that was rather dubious, and of course you know that Diebold was decertified in California there because of machine malfunctions, and the state legislature there charged Diebold with having misrepresented the effectiveness of their machines, and so that was an out-of-court settlement, but Diebold did end up paying quite a stiff fine for that. That came on the heels of the Secretary of State's ruling in regard to one county being overturned by the state legislature here. And prior to that, the same lobbyists had succeeded in getting the state legislature in Ohio to pass a law that requires all voting machines by the year 2006 to produce voter-verifiable paper receipts. Now, of course, that wouldn't apply to the 2004 election. There was a federal bill that would have required all states in the country to have that sort of voting machine, that is the kind that can be verified by 2004, but that bill was held up in Congress by another notable Ohioan, Republican Congressman Bob Ney, who also won re-election in the same November election here. So the California's having decertified Diebold was critical to our efforts here to get our Secretary of State to withdraw his support. And when he had commanded one county in Ohio to purchase the Diebold machines, precisely because their Board of Elections was evenly split on the decision of whether to buy them or not, and the Secretary of State intervened and commanded them to purchase those machines, that was overturned by our state legislature. And from that point on, no new electronic voting machines were purchased in Ohio prior to the 2004 election.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you for a second and pose a question to you, Evan. We're sitting here in Southern California hearing the detail of, political drama in Ohio. And I can tell you that just from my travels throughout circles, people are all well and over the results of the election. They're like, Bush got in, we got another 4 years, let's start organizing. Without getting back into the timeline details, what do you think's at stake here? And why do you think people should be paying attention to Ohio at all now, over almost 2 months after the election?
Well, there are really two ways to answer that. And on the one hand, you could look at the effects of 4 years of the current administration and people's fears about what will happen in the coming 4 years if that same administration is allowed to persist. Ohio's been very adversely affected by a lot of the policies from that administration, both on the environmental and employment fronts and health care, and then, of course, there are the wars and all of that. But on a more fundamental level, something even larger than that may be at stake, which is, as you suggested in your introduction, the integrity of our democratic process, our ability to elect representatives of our choice. And although people may be complacent about the electoral results, that doesn't mean that they're not still angry about what they saw going on November 2nd. And here in Ohio, especially, it was really, really dramatic. And Bob can fill you in on some of the details about what took place on Election Day and what's been going on since. But I can tell you that leading up to November 2nd, we saw a groundswell of political activity here that was absolutely unprecedented. Most people who had voted in many successive elections had never seen this level of enthusiasm and urgency since the McGovern race. People who had never voted in their lives before registered and came out to vote on that particular day. Grassroots organizations that had never existed before were having to change their meeting venues because they're getting too many people to fit in restaurants and union halls and various meeting rooms. So that momentum has taken a blow, but it has not subsided. In fact, my impression is that many people are just waiting for some kind of leadership, some kind of instruction, some kind of impetus, a call to action that will let them feel that their efforts will be worth something again.
Which leads us to what happened on the election, on the day of the election, and what's been happening since. Now, for our listeners, in the last week, there has been a profound amount of activity around what's happened in Ohio. Bob, who's joined us on the phone, Bob Fitrakis, the editor of the Columbus Free Press, actually gave a voting rights speech last week, which I'm going to quote. And that voting rights speech is pretty profound. I will quote Bob. It says, "It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us that from these great martyred dead, whose blood continues to consecrate our democracy, we take inspiration that we here highly resolved that these voting rights martyrs should not have died in vain, that these people who waited 5, 10, up to 12 hours to vote did not wait in vain, that our great nation, inspired by universal and natural laws of unbending justice, shall have a rebirth of democracy." Bob, those are deep words. What did you mean by that?
Well, I was thinking at the time, those who study history will note an echoing of the Gettysburg Address, is that I was sitting in Ohio, you know, the heart of the old Union, and I was thinking of the Gettysburg Address at the time, and I was thinking, what's really at stake here in Ohio? I mean, something's infinitely more important than whether John Kerry or George Bush wins the election. It's the great institution of democracy is on trial before the American people, and that would Lincoln had spoken about in the Gettysburg Address, government of the people, by the people, and for the people, whether or not it will perish from this earth, is really what was on my mind that day, because I absolutely believe if you allow private, secret, corporate vendors to tell you who won elections with no paper trail, with complete lack of transparency, then essentially democracy is dead in the United States.
So, Bob, what's going on this week? What exactly, what are the details that are, you know, bringing these issues up now?
Well, there's a variety of details. I mean, for example, this morning, Secretary of State Ken Blackwell, who also serves as the Bush-Cheney reelection committee chair in Ohio, the co-chair of Bush-Cheney reelection, refused to show up for a deposition. I'm one of the three attorneys that has filed a lawsuit to challenge the election results in Ohio because we believe that the election exit polls are correct. Remember that the consortium election polls, which have a very small margin of error, showed John Kerry winning with 51% of the vote. The Zogby poll showed John Kerry winning with 53% of the vote. Note that the challenger in the Ukraine was shown winning with 54% of the vote, and the U.S. government demanded a revote. And we have similar results here in Ohio. I believe that John Kerry, in fact, won the election based on the exit polls, and that there is evidence of widespread tampering throughout Ohio with results that if anyone took 5 minutes and just looked at them, would say that those results are fraudulent or are wrong because of accident or error.
What kind of evidence are we looking at? Like maybe
specifically,
a couple of examples.
Yeah.
Well, we could go to Miami County where we have a screenshot with 100% of the votes reporting, and then an additional 19,000 votes come in at the exact same ratio for Kerry and Bush. We have counties, and Evan has been involved in canvassing there. We have a county, South Concord, where they claimed everyone but 10 people voted, where there was a 98.55% voter turnout. And Evan's initial canvass has already found 25 people that say that they did not vote. So when you look at these vote totals, particularly in the Bush areas, you know, some people say computer glitch, software glitch, or computer malfunction, but it looks like somebody was visibly tampering with the vote. I mean, in Gahanna Ward 1B, 638 people cast votes for president. the president got 4,258 votes. I mean, they've now corrected that. We believe that there's far more errors throughout Ohio. Many of these are in Democratic wards where machines, where Kerry should have been carrying 70 to 30, suddenly there's a minus 25 million votes. Virtually all of the areas affect the Kerry votes. In a district in Cleveland where Kerry was winning 97.5%, in an African-American area, they claim only 7.1% of the people turned out to vote. So in the Democratic areas, you'll see these really low vote totals, but in the Republican areas, you'll see precincts where they claim 98.55% of the people voted. I think by accident, error, or in some cases, deliberate human intervention, votes were in fact added to Bush and subtracted from Kerry.
And then we get to the recount itself, and tell us about Cheryl Eaton.
Well, I mean, you've got the election worker there in Hocking County, and Evan covered that as well, saying, look, Triad comes in.
Tell our listeners who Triad is, please.
Triad is in 41 counties. They're a private company here that assists in voting software and with central tabulators. A lot of these are all private companies. For example, Diebold in Lucas County, where Toledo is, leases the machines and the software. It's all trade secrets. Nobody knows what's in their secret software. ES&S, another Republican-connected firm. The predecessor company, AIS, was actually partly owned by Republican Senator Chuck Hagel, who has ties to the Bush family, particularly the Bush the Elder. He organized the G7 forum. So you've got all these private companies all over the state, of which Triad is in 41 counties. And essentially, when it came time to recount, these companies went in and pretty much handled and orchestrated the recounts. The recounts are supposed to be done randomly. That means any ballot has the same chance of being included. But usually what happened in Lucas County and is with Diebold and with Triad, they knew in advance what ballots were going to be recounted, and they went in and reprogrammed the machines in order to get a perfect recount. And that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for a random recount to see if there's any evidence of fraud or error.
Well, Cheryl Eaton does an affidavit where she says that a member of Triad came in and explained to her how to post a cheat sheet on the wall so the count would come out perfect and they wouldn't have to do a full-hand recount of the county. Is that correct?
Actually, I can answer to that because I interviewed both the technician who posted that alleged cheat sheet and Cheryl Eaton. And there is, if you don't dig too deeply, there's a logical explanation for that. The precincts that were selected for that recount had a certain number of what they call overvotes and undervotes, that is, ballots that don't have the proper number of chads punched out or that have too many of the chads punched out. And those are insignificant numbers. They're just a few per precinct generally. And in this case, in order for the hand count to match the machine tally, the technician wanted the people who would be engaged in the hand count to know how many undervotes or overvoted ballots to look for. Now, there's some accuracy in calling that a cheat sheet because technically that's not information that either the person operating the machine tally or the hand counters should necessarily know in advance. It was information gleaned from the initial machine tabulation. There was, however, the implication that the technician was suggesting that the hand counters would want to adjust their hand tally to reflect those numbers in order to make the hand count match the machine count. And that's critical because only if the hand count and the machine counts do not match after two successive tries, does the law intervene and require that a full 100% hand count of all of the ballots in that county take place. And it's my view that we will never know the accuracy of this election or the intent of the voters in Ohio unless hand counts are done in all the counties.
Well, it certainly prompted Conyers, the ranking House Judiciary Committee member, senior Democrat John Conyers, to accuse Brett Rapp, the boss of Triad Systems, of orchestrating a criminal conspiracy to pervert the outcome of the Ohio recount.
Right. Under Ohio law, the law requires a random recount. Again, this would be to see if things would match up. It's sort of like if you pick three cards from a deck and then you were asked to see, you know, to guess what they were, they'd be randomly picked to see your accuracy. Now, what if I show you the three cards? I bet you could match them perfectly if you knew in advance what the three cards were that were, quote, randomly picked. So they did the exact opposite of a random selection. And it raises another question. Why can't the county officials who run the Board of Election pick the ballots and run them through a machine to recount them? Why do they need private corporate vendors who overwhelmingly in this case, and in the case of Diebold and ES&S, are Republican partisans? It seems absurd that you would be allowing private corporations with secret software to essentially tell you who won the election. In fact, two counties, when we asked them for their election results, simply forwarded letters from their vendors telling us what the vote count was. I mean, we've privatized the vote counting, and these corporations that count the vote secretly, partisans of President Bush.
Right. You know, this also has impact, obviously, for those who are paying attention to the Kerry side of the equation. This is a significant impact for Kerry. Now, the Libertarian Party and the Green Party have been pushing very hard for the Ohio recount. Did Kerry file for expedited discovery on the 23rd?
I don't know whether – I think they did go forward with that, but Kerry has tried to maintain standards. What Kerry specifically asked for was that these machines be impounded and inspected. He sent a letter, an 11-point inquiry, which I was in a call when he explained that to Jesse Jackson on the phone. But he has specific concerns, and he particularly referenced New Mexico as well, with these Diebold and these OptiScan machines, because it seems like where these machines are, they don't reflect the demographics of Democrats and Republicans. So what he wanted is to look at the machines, to have them impounded, to have forensic computer experts pore over them and make sure they're calibrated correctly. In Sylvania Ward 3 in Lucas County, which is where Toledo is that when they brought out the memory cards to do the recount, they found that the card in place on Election Day had not been programmed and needed to be reprogrammed. So what's happening with all these reprogramming events? Two memory cards in Franklin County from an e-voting machine, a computer voting machine, gave error codes essentially saying that they could not be read from Election Day. So why are these widespread problems, and why doesn't anybody know what's wrong with them, and why can't Mr. Kerry or, for example, the people challenging these elections look at these machines and find out what's wrong with them?
You're listening to Indie Media on the Air. My name is Stephen Starr. I'm here in the studio with Chris Burnett. We are on the phone with Evan Davis and Bob Fitrakis. Evan, Pacifica correspondent, and Bob is the editor of the Columbus Free Press. We will be back. You're at KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. We're going to take a quick break and then come back to tell you all about what's happening next week on the Hill in Washington, D.C., with John Conyers challenging the outcome. Gentlemen, please stay with us.
You're listening to Indie Media On Air on Community Radio, KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara, and the whole world. Wide web at kpfk.org. You can hear a special two-hour edition of The Car Show this Saturday from 11 to 1 p.m. That's 2 hours of everything dealing with the automotive world, including listener call-ins, event calendar, new products, vehicle road tests, and more. That's again a special two-hour edition of The Car Show Saturday from 11 to 1 p.m. Coming up at 4 is the Voices from the Frontline edition of the 4 o'clock report.
Like we do. prejudice,
tolerance,
discrimination,
acceptance,
bigotry,
advocacy.
Where do you fit in?
IMRU, Southern California's only gay and lesbian radio magazine.
90.7 at 7, every Monday night.
And we're back. You're listening to Indie Media On Air. Chris Burnett in the studio with me, Stephen Starr. We are on the telephone with Bob Fitrakis, the editor-in-chief or the editor of the Columbus Free Press, and Evan Davis, Pacifica correspondent. Evan and Bob are in Ohio, the site of some massive questions about the veracity of the election in November. And it seems that evidence is mounting that there was corruption at the highest level, and perhaps the recount has also been tainted. John Conyers will be or is expected on the 6th of January to take a certain stand on Capitol Hill. Bob, could you tell us about that?
Well, he sent out a letter, and this is after I, among other people from Ohio, and including the Reverend Jesse Jackson, testified before the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee, and they also came to Columbus. What we made available to them is sworn testimony that was taken under oath at community public hearings throughout the state of Ohio, Cincinnati, Cleveland, two hearings in Columbus, and now there's been one in Toledo, as well as in Trumbull, Mahoning County, the Mahoning Valley area. And also hundreds of notarized affidavits sworn under penalty of perjury. And what they got, they were willing to listen, unlike much of the mainstream media. And what they got is information that makes them question the fairness of the Ohio election. Again, I'm on record believing that the exit polls are right. So what Representative John Conyers has pledged to do is that when the Electoral College meets, those of you who saw Fahrenheit 9/11, is that he will attempt to challenge the Ohio electors, the ones that were certified, in question and to openly debate the election results in Ohio.
What happens? Play out a domino effect for us if, in fact, Conyers is successful at the Electoral College level.
Well, I hope that there's 35 states that were sort of more or less in play, but particularly there were 11 battleground states. And in 10 of those, you had abnormal results. So I think if people begin to look at these exit polls, in three states alone, that is Florida, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, is the exit polls all fell significantly, and that is more than three standard deviations. I mean, which is massively unlikely. It's so unlikely that these exit polls would be so wrong and all in the favor of President Bush. It makes it sort of like hitting the mega lotto and the super lotto on the same night. In fact, an initial analysis from Ron Behman, a statistician at the University of Illinois, puts the odds of these polls being so wrong outside the margin of error in these three key battleground states as 155 million to one.
Well,
that means you flip a coin and it comes up heads 155 million times before it comes up tails. So what I think, hopefully there'll be a ripple effect, and that this could really go on in a couple weeks of really questioning these results, which are statistically highly, highly improbable, unlikely, and I think they're more attributable to error, accident, or absolute human fraud in switching votes. I think the exit polls are right. They're right in the U.S. and they're right in the Ukraine. Thank God that John Conyers is willing to raise these questions.
Well, I just want to touch on something before. Chris, you have a number you want to give out, yeah? Oh, okay, we're gonna go to the phones in just a minute. I think there's a question or two before we do, but the number here is 818-985-5735. Beyond that, I just need you to get even more specific, Bob or Evan, for that matter. If we're talking about a Electoral College standoff around what happened in some of the key battleground states, Give us a timeline of process of what actually happens.
Well, there'll be a two-hour discussion with retirement to both houses. So I think that actually should, by the time, if that happens in more than one state, it could literally go on if there's a ripple effect, conceivably right up to January 18th or 19th. I mean, if it really takes off, we could see Representative Dennis Haster as president, or, you know, assuming that he's going to be the Speaker of the House again. It's, I mean, we have procedures in the Constitution, but if this goes for more than the roll call vote, they'll be doing it state by state. And some of these states, clearly there's not a question for Alaska, for example. But if you begin to look at the voting irregularities, they occurred in 10 out of 11 battleground states, and also may have occurred in as many as 35 states. So if there is a ripple effect, we could be debating, we could be postponing the inauguration.
Well, also, let's not forget that the Green Party is still petitioning for a recount in the state of New Mexico, although they weren't able to raise the requisite funds to demand one there through the front door, let's say, so to speak. They are still trying to effect one there. And I would say even locally here in Ohio and elsewhere, if local litigations, such as the contest of election here in Ohio, produce a court-ordered investigation, which would include a hand recount, then that process, too, will take quite some time. It takes quite a bit longer to recount the ballots by hand than electronically. And so we might even find ourselves in the thick of a discovery process on January 6th, which would effectively hold up the results or at least call them into question.
I want to remind listeners that we're going to be going to phones in about 5 minutes. The phone number here is 818-985-5735. That's area code 818-985-KPFK. One question I want to ask both of you is you know, we have this situation with Kerry conceding immediately, and a lot of people felt that, you know, this man doesn't really represent working people's interest, is in many ways was very spineless for just giving up in that, you know, so quickly. And on Indy Media on Air a few weeks ago, in the last few weeks, we've had a lot of guests talking about Iraq and, you know, the fact that the Kerry administration probably, in terms of the U.S. foreign policy in Iraq, would not have changed. It's really hard to, in many ways, for my gut to get behind, you know, this whole Kerry thing. And I recognize, Bob, that you say that what's really at stake here is more fundamental than that. It's a principle of democracy that, you know, we can't let them get away with this. In the bigger picture of what's actually happening, I'd like you to respond to that. And also, you know, what's to prevent the Supreme Court from just stepping in again and giving the election to Bush?
Well, I think the bigger picture here, and I say this as someone who's written a book called Spooks, Nukes, and Nazis, is that on a much grander scale, the United States rigged elections all over the Third World in the 1970s and 80s. In fact, the Church Committee by former Senator Frank Church of Idaho documented hundreds and hundreds of these so-called benign operations. That's because they didn't have to kill people. There were many operations during the Cold War where, you know, tens of thousands of people died. Now, I wrote an article called Debolt Electronic Voting in the Vast Right-Wing Conspiracy in February 24, 2004. This goes more to the question of what type of society America is going to be. Essentially, I believe what used to be done covertly in the Third World is being brought home, and that the privatization of these elections and the destruction of the democratic process, and this extends beyond John Kerry, this extends to how difficult it is to get third-party candidates on the ballot, whether it's Ralph Nader or Mr. Cobb or a Libertarian candidate, is that what you're seeing essentially is the demise of a range of opinions. And as long as we allow private corporations to control our vote, we'll never have any form of real democracy, whether it's for a shallow, gutless, and soulless Democratic Party giving little opposition, or the new voices that need to emerge. What people need to think about this, my dad was a Teamster. When you had someone come down to Teamster Hall, you know, like Jimmy the Weasel, and he grabbed the ballot box and took it in the back room and counted it and then shredded every bit of paper and came out and announced who won, people knew there was a corruption. You now have the exact same thing. You have electronic voting machines with no paper trails run by partisan supporters of President Bush and the Republican Party without a paper trail telling you to accept on faith who won the election, even as the machines jump from Kerry to Bush, even as the machines show 638 people voting and 4,258 votes for the president. What is at stake here goes well beyond John Kerry. What is at stake here is whether in the future we will have transparency and we can actually trust the vote in the United States, or whether people long associated with the CIA, long associated with the military-industrial complex, are now conducting what they themselves call demonstration elections. That is, bogus election with predetermined outcome and predetermined policy results that make us feel good about ourselves but have nothing to do with real democracy.
And the Supreme Court.
Oh, the Supreme Court. I mean, they may do it again, but I think that's good. The more you can force this Supreme Court to show that it's an undemocratic force, the more democracy and the people will take other forms of action. I mean, ultimately, demonstration and protesting in the street has worked far better for the Ukraine than relying upon a court that is, of course, conservative and appointed for life and with direct ties to reactionary forces.
Well, I think there's a difference there, though, between the Ukraine and the United States. The specific details of the Ukraine and the U.S. involvement in that.
Yeah, there was one point difference in the exit polls, 53 to 54, so I agree.
Right. But the other difference, though, I think, is it has to do with the inspiration and the motivation of the Ukrainians who did protest, because as somebody who's actually gone out into the precincts, and Bob, you know, as somebody who's spoken with many of the voters who stepped forward to give affidavits, the kind of people who really put a lot of faith in this election, not necessarily the candidates, mind you, but just the electoral process, who felt that even though they were voting for the lesser of two evils, and I've scarcely found anybody who did not see the election that way, even among the staunchest of Kerry supporters, those people who essentially had their efforts wasted because their votes apparently did not count are really the angriest, but they don't necessarily represent the majority of the population here. It is essential that we help people understand that democracy itself is what's at stake, because to arouse enough ire, to motivate enough people to get into enough streets, to make enough of a difference, we're going to have to challenge people's basic assumptions. And unfortunately, after decades and decades of rightward drifting parties, both of them, and increasingly vacant campaign rhetoric from increasingly unaccountable candidates, the result is an erosion of faith not only in the vote, but in the whole political franchise as well. People would care more if they thought that their votes, had they been counted correctly, would have counted for something more than they know they would have.
And on that note, we're going to actually go to phones right now. So we have a number of callers on the line, and we're going to start with Michael in Santa Monica. And I want to give out the phone number real quick. It's 818-985-5735. Michael, welcome to Indie Media On Air. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, excellent conversation. I appreciate what you guys are saying. One other difference between Ukraine and America is that the Ukrainians could protest. Americans were arrested with high-tech arrest equipment, I'll call it, and put into basically incarcerated. The media didn't cover that. There's another problem that older people especially, who've trusted the media, who've trusted the television, you know, for years and for decades, and now it's all being aimed in one partisan direction. They don't have access to the Internet, where most of the information is now about what's going on. Also, I just want to say that if you have this conversation directed to the events of 9-1-1, the fact that the crime scene was transported out of the country and everything else that went along with it, and watch movies like 9-1-1 in Plain Sight, log on to wingtv.net and other things, you'll see that that is the root cause of this whole thing. And I don't know, it just seems like, here's my question, it seems like that it's a full frontal assault on from every direction by a very sophisticated and well-organized group of people. So what, you know, and it seems like people are either ignorant of the problem or they're kind of like, well, what can I do, you know? So that's my question. What can the ordinary person do in this situation?
Bob, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think ordinary people are already doing a variety of it, like your last caller. I mean, they're writing on the Internet, which, you know, the freepress.org is there and other sites, which have, you know, really driven this issue and drugged the mainstream media along. I mean, the New York Times originally dismissed us as conspiracy theorists. And, you know, if you look at our complaint, we have 20 counties at least with major, major voting irregularities. Now we're starting to get coverage. But this was done by, driven by the Internet and driven by people demonstrating and people coming in and taking arrest. You know, the caller is right. To a certain extent, we're seeing this sort of kind of the rise of smiley face kind of theo-fascism, where they're slowly and steadily, you know, taking away our rights. But I think people can do what they've always done. They can show up in January 3rd in Columbus or January 6th in Washington. They can write. They can write letters. They can have solidarity rallies. And that as these people come to power, we got to let people know this is not legitimate. And this really looks in many ways like the coup in Florida in 2000 has now led to a coup in Ohio in 2004. And also break the silence by pointing out that the U.S. regularly has intervened and rigged elections around the world. And it's used computer in bringing Noriega's forces to power in Panama when he was our man in Panama, or Marcos in the Philippines when we tried to get him elected when Aquino ran against him, and that we need to realize that these things happen, and I think people will do, once they get the facts, their voices will rise up, and I think we're due for a huge clash in this country, the forces of democracy versus the forces of this kind of creeping theo-fascism.
Okay.
If only Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and the nationally owned Venezuelan oil company there would do us a favor and purchase some mainstream opposition media here in the United States and foment a coup, then we'd be even, right?
Let's keep moving. Mary from East LA.
I want to thank Michael for the phone call and the question. Mary in East LA. Sorry, Stephen.
Okay. First of all, thank you for covering this such an important issue. I have been getting 50 emails a day, actually sometimes 50 an hour. And what we feel, in this one Yahoo group is that because the exit polls are basically the one way that you can tell whether an election was rigged or not, we need to get the evidence of the exit polls, the raw exit poll numbers,
right.
And Conyers won't give it to us. If each person listening could get three more people to call ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, and insist that the raw exit poll data be out there, or we're stopping to it. We won't watch news anymore, and we won't buy their products. This may also work, because we've got to do something that's going to hurt their pocketbook and make them realize that we're on to them.
Now, that's a very good point. In fact, we're arranging to notice Mr. Potosky, who did the exit poll for the consortium, and also to subpoena the exit polls, because what happened is suddenly the exit polls sort of acted up, and they began to correct and adjust, which means it's not a real exit poll. It means they adjusted the exit poll to show a Bush victory. We believe that this essentially is wrong, and that we need to find out. You're right. The raw data is smoking gun. And the consortium, which includes CNN and ABC, needs to release that to the people so we can decide whether or not this election was stolen. And I'm telling you, statistically, it really looks like it was stolen or hacked.
Bob, we're going to try to fly through. We got a bunch of people who want to get on with us, so we're going to try to keep your comments brief, folks, and let's keep moving. We got Joe in the Valley. Joe in the Valley.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, awesome discussion, serious discussion here. I think the election coverage should continue as it's going on right now with what you guys are covering here. Maybe KPFK can do more of this through these events. I think this is so important. I want to say, What happened is significant not only in the voting machines, but the fact that these secretary of states who are running the elections are about partisan and are even, you know, the heads of their campaigns for, you know, like for Bush in Ohio and as it was in Florida back in 2000. So that's ridiculous too. This whole thing is ridiculous. It's so obvious that these elections were stolen, and also with the preventing people from going to the ballots with bogus voter registrations disguised as medical marijuana registrations. You know, come on, it's obvious. The only thing that's more ridiculous is that most people don't know because of our stolen media, and that's why it's so important that that shows like this continue and that we get the word out and that we push for either a recall. A recount at the very least, or a revote like they're doing in the Ukraine. I mean, come on now. The elections were rigged, stolen. Democracy did not happen in 2004.
Okay,
and
so
I think one more real important point. I think what we can get is a win-win out of this. We can get Bush and company out of office, which they deserve to be, and also we can get Kerry into office, which is not much better than Bush, but it's not Bush. But also we've exposed Kerry to and the Democratic Party leadership to what they are, which is just part of the big old corporate system too. So that could be a win-win. But we still have to work towards, getting some better people in there, like Kucinich and Ralph Nader, et cetera, et cetera.
Joe, thanks a lot.
And women in there too.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks
Joe.
For your call.
We're going to keep moving. We really want to let other people on the phone. We only have a couple of minutes left.
Orlando in Orange County.
Yeah.
Are you with
thanks.
Us? Welcome to Indie Media on Air. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes. My comment is that I sent $25 to help in the recount in Ohio, and I was glad to do it. And I think this is something that can energize the Green Party and other parties. And the question is, what do your guests feel that how do they? My point is this. A lot of people were depressed, and I think they can transform that depression into a different kind of energy by doing something. And I think thank KPFK for having this program on it right now and to continue breaching this subject, because if this is not dealt with, forget about the whatever kind of democracy we have. Thank you.
Orlando, this is Evan in Ohio. Can I respond to that with one quick comment, which is an action alert? If you want a message of hope, if you want to hear more about this coming straight from Ohio, and you're a KPFK listener, the rally that we will be having here at 2 p.m. in Columbus, Ohio on January 3rd will be either broadcast live via the Pacifica satellite or recorded for later broadcast. We're working out the technology now. So one thing you can do as a KPFK listener is contact the station's program director or anyone at the station who will respond to a call and ask that the station broadcast some or all of that rally.
What website can people go to right now to get information on this, Bob?
Oh, the freepress.org is updated lately. In fact, we're putting out a major article tonight. And there's also a reference to the event on December 3rd as well. And also we're calling for a national protest to support John Conyers when the Electoral College meets on January 6th.
Okay.
Freepress.org again.
Freepress.org. We're going to try to get one more caller on the line, and we got to be quick. So Sheila in Montclair, welcome to Indie Media on Air. Do you have a quick question or comment for a guest?
Hello. want to congratulate you for your program and also for those that are determined to get to the bottom of the stolen election. The evil idiot had the nerve to criticize Ukraine, but we have a stolen election in this country, and the mere fact that they use paperless machines owned by the repugnants is proof enough to me that this was stolen yet again. But I take my hat off to your guests and to all those that are trying to recount. I, too, contributed to the financial support of the recount in Ohio, and I'll be out there demonstrating. I want to tell people, too, I want to mirror what the other caller said about contacting the media and demanding that they turn over the exit polling results, and I want to ask all listeners to drop their subscription to Time Magazine. Do not buy it. Boycott it. Let's boycott these products.
Thanks a lot, Sheila. Thank you so much. And for listeners who want to donate to the recount effort, they can go to freepress.org. There is a donate button there.
And we have to wrap up. This is it for Indie Media on Air. We want to thank our guests.
Our guests today have been Bob Fitrakis, the editor of the Columbus Free Press. Thank you so much, Bob. We've also had Evan Davis, our longtime Pacifica correspondent, ex-FSRN contributor, and
our engineer, Delphine.
Yay.
And Alan Minsky, the producer.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
You have been listening to Indie Media On Air, heard Mondays from 3 to 4 in the afternoon on community-based KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and at kpfk.org for the world. The voices from the frontline edition of the 4 o'clock report is coming up next. Stay tuned to hear more progressive, independent radio.